Testing in the House Chamber, 138th Legislative Day.
The House will come to order. Members will take their seats. Visitors will retire from the chamber. Sergeant Arms will close the doors. Members and visitors ask to please silence all electronic devices. This afternoon's prayer will be offered by Representative Horn. We'd ask our members and the guests in the gallery to please stand for the prayer and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance following the prayer. Representative Horn.
Please pray with me. Dear Lord, we come to you this day with grateful hearts to humbly request your guidance, your patience, and your help. Your guidance so that we may do good, your patience so that we may persevere, and your help so that we may perform well the tasks set before us. Help us to be humble in your service and in the service of our state. Help us to be mindful of our duties to each other, and to help us to see grace, grace in how we talk and walk and stand, and grace in how we kneel before you and our fellow man. As we come to the merciful end of yet another week, may any of us with long drives home, please reach down, guide us, keep us safe. Protect those that serve some in harm's way. Nurture those that hunger, whether it be for food for their bodies or food for their souls. And give us peace. Lord, I ask all this in your holy name. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for October 1st has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Lewis moves the journal for October 1st be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The journal is approved as written. Members, we have a group of students with us up here on the on my left, on your right. A group of students here with us from Rollsville Charter Academy in Rollsville here in Wake County. Would y'all please wave so we can welcome you? Thanks for being with us today. Which member represents Rollsville? Your representative is Representative Everett, right? Walk over there, they can see Representative Everett. He's walking over this way where you can see he's your representative. There he is right there. Also, on motion of Representative Corbin of Macon County, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to Mayor James Reed and Town Clerk Emily Mallon of Andrews. Would y'all please stand so we can welcome you as well over here on the left. Thanks for being with us. Members, as you know, we have a joint session today. And so we are going to move without objection, move around the calendar, try to dispose of as many bills as we can before that time. House Bill 1008, the clerk will read.
Representatives Setzer, Zoka, Ross, and Carney, House Bill 1008, a bill to be entitled Real Property Donation Tax Credit, General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
The gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Zoka, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First, I'd like to thank the other sponsors on this bill, Representative Setzer, Representative Ross, and Representative Carney. Protection of encroachment towards military bases continues to be a major priority of this legislature. What this bill does is offer a limited tax credit to corporations and individuals who donate property or give an easement in perpetuity on land that they own that can be used. And let me quote here from page 1, line 16 of the bill, as a buffer to limit land use activities that would restrict, impede, or interfere with military training, testing, or operations on a military installation or training area, or otherwise be incompatible with the mission of the installation. This type of easement has been used in the past. It used to be part of our law. It went out a few years ago. I think it would be good to bring it back because we've had a lot of debate in the last few years about flight routes into Dare County bombing range, about activities around Fort Bragg and Camp Lejeune and other places. The corporation or individual can receive a tax credit of 25% of the fair market value of the donated property interest, and the maximum amount for any 1 year cannot exceed $500,000. So we put limits on it so large property owners can't get excessive tax credits. So the benefits of this, obviously, are military bases, training areas, and flight routes are protected from encroachment. And it did receive unanimous votes in finance and rules, and I'd ask for your support. Thank you.
Members, the chair is in possession of an amendment from Representative Floyd. The chair is reviewing it to see if the amendment is going to be germane to the bill. It does appear to significantly expand the bill. So the chair is going to displace the bill, and we'll come back to that one later. I want to get if the gentleman and the bill sponsors could concur on that. The chair does believe, the chair will go ahead and predict at this point, the chair does believe that goes significantly beyond the scope of the bill. But give the gentleman time to discuss that. We're going to displace that. Let's go back up to the top of the calendar and take care of House Bill 283, the corporal read.
Representatives Jones, Bell, Moore, and Hastings, House Bill 283.
The corporal read the amendment as well, please.
Senator Alexander moves to amend the bill on page 2, line 9, by deleting the word when and substituting the phrase on after July 2016 when.
The gentleman from Columbus, Representative Jones, recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move to concur with the bill, please.
The gentleman moves to concur with Senate Amendment 1 and concur with the bill. The gentleman has recognized to debate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Folks, most of you have seen and heard about this. This is in honor of my friend Kevin Connor, that was the state trooper that was murdered last October. It is fitting that this bill has come back before us on the one-year anniversary of his murder. Not a lot of changes on the Senate side. We did incorporate a few of the other officers that had died in the line of duty to make sure that their families will also be able to partake in the double indemnity on the insurance. I ask for your green vote and honor my friend Kevin Connor today.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House is the adoption of the motion to concur of Senate Amendment 1, House Committee Substitute, House Bill 283. Clerk Webben, those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed to vote no. Clerk Webben, the vote. Representative Floyd, aye. Floyd, aye. Representative Farmer Butterfield, Terry, Brockman, Rogers, Johnson. Members wish to record. Representative Brockman on the floor. Clerk will lock machine record the vote. 101 having voted in the affirmative, 3 in the negative. The House does concur with the Senate, House Committee Substitute to House Bill 283. Bill's ordered enrolled, sent to the governor. We'll go ahead and go back to 1008. It's already been read. Representative Floyd has filed an amendment. The chair has reviewed the amendment, and the chair respectfully rules that the amendment is not germane to the bill. It does get beyond the scope, and the amendment will be returned to the gentleman. Further discussion, further debate on the bill? If not, the question before the House is the passage of House Bill 1008 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Of Clerk will light the machine, record the vote. 104 having voted in the affirmative and none of the negative. House Bill 1008 passed the second reading. Will without objection be read a third time.
The General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Question for the House. Passage of House Bill 1008 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Bill 1008, having passed third reading, is ordered sent to the Senate. Move to the bottom of the calendar. Senate Bill 690. Clerk will read.
Senator Raven, Senate Bill 690, a bill to be entitled Modifications to 2019 Amendments Bill. General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, is recognized to debate Senate Bill 690.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker and members, what this bill does is to fill some vacancies that have arisen on various boards. We went through the nominees pretty extensively in the Rules Committee yesterday. The staff has verified each of these folks is in good standing to serve on these boards, and I would respectfully ask my colleagues to join me in approval of this bill.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 690 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Hastings, wish to vote on the bill? Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 100 having voted in the affirmative, 4 in the negative. Senate Bill 690 passed the second reading. Will without objection. Read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina next.
Question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 690 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 690 having passed third reading. We return to the Senate. Senate Bill 572. The clerk will read.
Senator Perry, Senate Bill 572, a bill to maintain an act to authorize public universities to obtain liability insurance for alcohol sales. General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell, recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, this legislation would allow public universities that sell or serve alcohol to obtain insurance to protect against the liability arising or in connection with such activities. This is a clarification bill. A lot of us did not think this needed to happen, but we work with the departments, and we all agreed that this needs to be put in place to clarify the existing language. Thank you very much. I stand ready to answer any questions.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 572 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk Lott machine record the vote. 101 having voted in the affirmative, 4 in the negative. Senate Bill 572 passes second reading. Will without objection. You read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 572 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 572 having passed third reading will be returned to the Senate. Senate Bill 433, the clerk will read.
Senators Bergen, Ballard, and Woodard, Senate Bill 433, a bill to be entitled DNCR Omnibus and Other Changes. General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell, recognize to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I believe there's an amendment that we would like to dispose of first, if all possible.
We can do that. Representative McElrath is recognized to send forth an amendment. Clerk will read.
Representative McElrath moves to amend the bill on page 6, lines 24 through 25, by inserting the following language between those lines.
The lady from Carteret has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, members. This is just clarification that DEQ, the Department of Water Resources, needed in disaster grant funding for the Coastal Storm Mitigation Fund. They just needed this clarification to give those grants. Hope you will support.
Further discussion, further debate on the amendment? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A1. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk will light machine record the vote. 104 having voted in the affirmative, none in the negative. The amendment's adopted. We're now on the bill. The gentleman from Wayne has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, this is the Department of Natural and Cultural Resources bill. It does do some other changes that are technical. I know of no opposition to this bill. However, I will point out there is one piece. If you remember before we went on our little recess, we had talked about the Eureka, Fremont, and Cliffside water situation that was going on. The fix that we worked with the Department of Local Government Commission and the folks at Diener, we all worked together to address the piece that they were questioning. That is in here as well. Stand ready to answer any questions.
For what purpose, the lady from Guilford, Representative Harrison Rice.
To briefly debate the bill. The
lady has four.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I just wanted to point out a really important section of the bill that's on page 5, section 7, and I want to give the Speaker's staff a lot of credit for this good language and the collaboratory. This deals with the fire foam, the toxic fire foam issue that our state faces right now. This is the PFAS chemical family that is known carcinogens and neurotoxicants and immunosuppressants, and this will require a inventory be taken so that we can have an assessment of where we are in the state on dealing with this toxic fire foam. Several of us have filed, and many of you have co-sponsored, separate legislation to limit the use of this toxic fire foam, and I hope eventually we'll take that legislation up in the short session. But I did want to note that we've got documented fire foam contamination in many of the water supplies throughout this state, including Charlotte, Stanley County, Greensboro, Seymour Johnson and Goldsboro, and Atlantic. And this is a real problem, and this is a problem. I don't want to be hyperbolic about the public health crisis that we might face if we can't get this cleaned up and out of our water systems, but I do hope that we can spend some serious time looking at this in the short session. In the meantime, I commend this section to you and this very good bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House is the passage of Senate Bill 433. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Representative Reeves on the floor. Clerk will light machine record the vote. 106 having voted in the affirmative and none of the negatives. Senate Bill 433 passes second reading and will without objection. Here at third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina acts.
Again, members, this requires a recorded vote on third reading because of the nature of the bill. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Representative Speciale on the floor. Representative Reeves. Speciale? Aye. Speciale, aye. Mr. Clerk. Clerk will light machine record the vote. 106 having voted in the affirmative, none of the negative. Senate Bill 433 passes its third reading. The bill is ordered returned to the Senate. For what purpose does the lady from Durham, Representative Black, rise?
To change my vote on House Bill 283 to a yes.
The lady will be recorded as having voted aye on the concurrence vote on House Bill 283. Members, we are going into joint session at 2 p.m., and the chair believes that the next two bills will probably take more than 2 to 3 minutes. So I don't see any use in starting those bills at this time. So we're going to stand at ease just a moment.
Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Floyd, rise?
On 433.
Just a moment. House will come to order. Could the gentleman please repeat that?
On House Bill 433.
Yes, sir.
I wish to vote no on the first reading and yes on the second reading.
Gentleman will be recorded as having voted aye on the second reading of the bill. Or gentleman wants to be an aye on both readings?
No, no on the first. Second. Third.
Are you saying you want to vote no on the first one and yes on the second one?
Yes.
Okay. Gentleman be recorded as having voted no on second reading of the bill, but aye on the third reading? That's what the gentleman wants. Gentleman be recorded. All right. For what purpose the lady from Durham, Representative Morey, rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Change my vote on 283 to an aye.
Just a moment. Members, I know we're doing some administrative matters, but the chair and the clerk need to be able to hear this. Representative Moore, could the lady please repeat the request?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To change my vote on House Bill 283 to an aye.
The lady will be recorded as having voted aye on House Bill 283. Representative Floyd, could the gentleman approach the dais, please? Members, chair's going to explain the process before we move into the opening of a joint session. This, of course, is a joint session with the Senate for the confirmation of State Board of Education appointments. What's going to happen in just a moment is Representative Lewis is going to make a motion that upon the dissolution of the joint session that we stand in recess, and then we're going to continue on with our business, and then I'm going to direct a message that the Senate be invited over for the joint session, and then we'll go through the process of inviting the senators in and commencing the joint session. Once we complete that, and the Lieutenant Governor will preside over the joint session, once we complete that business, I'll retake the dais, and then we'll stand in recess for about 10 minutes to let the senators leave and get back to their chamber, and then the chair intends for us to move on with the remaining business on the calendar. So before we do that, do we have any notices or announcements that need to be made at this time? Chair further directs that Senate Bill 433 be ordered engrossed. Gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, upon dissolution of the joint session, I move that the House stand in recess for 10 minutes, subject to the standard stipulations.
Without objection, so ordered. Chair directs a message be sent to the Senate informing that honorable body that the House stands ready to receive them in joint session. And we'll stand at ease till we proceed. From the Senate, the clerk will read.
Special message from the Senate. Mr. Speaker, it is ordered that a message be sent to the House of Representatives with the information that pursuant to Senate Joint Resolution 687, Resolution 2019-14, a joint resolution providing for the joint session of the General Assembly to act on confirmation of the appointments by the Governor of new members to the State Board of Education. The Senate stands ready to repair to the Hall of the House there to sit in joint session with the honorable body to consider confirmation of appointments by the Governor Roy Cooper to the State Board of Education. Respectfully, Sarah Holland, Principal Clerk.
Noted. The Sergeant at Arms is recognized in just a moment. Members, please take your seats and keep your conversations to a minimum. Sergeant at Arms recognized.
Mr. Speaker, the Senate and its officers await entrance at the door of the House.
Chair directs the Sergeant at Arms to admit the members of the Senate and their officers and to seat that honorable body.
Joint session will come to order. The chair will now relinquish the gavel to the Lieutenant Governor.
Hey, Lieutenant Governor, how are you doing, sir? Great to see you as always. Yes, sir.
Joint session will come to order. Chair directs an electronic quorum call taken of the members of this body elected to the House of Representatives. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine. The clerk will call the roll of the members elected to the Senate.
Alexander of Wake. Alexander of Cleveland.
Here.
Ballard.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blue.
Here.
Britt.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Bergen.
Here.
Chaudhary.
Here.
Clark. Clark. Daniel.
Here.
Davis of Pitt. Davis of Macon.
Here.
Devier.
Here.
Edwards. Fitch.
Present and accounted
for. Ford.
Here.
Fushi.
Present.
Gallimore.
Present.
Garrett.
Here.
Gunn.
Here.
Harrington. Heiss. Horner.
Here.
Jackson of Sampson.
Here.
Jackson of Mecklenburg.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Kravick.
Here.
Lowe.
Here.
Marcus.
Here.
McInnes. McKissick.
Here.
Muhammad.
Here.
Newton. Nickel.
Here.
Perry.
Here.
Peterson. Peterson. Rabin. Robinson.
Here.
Sanderson.
Here.
Sawyer.
Here.
Searcy.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Steinberg.
Here.
Tillman. Van Dyne.
Here.
Waddell.
Here.
Wells.
Here.
Woodard.
Come to order, please. Senator Clark is present. 130 members of the General Assembly are present, and a quorum of this joint session is confirmed. Letters from Governor Roy Cooper providing his nominations to the State Board of Education were received on March 21, 2019 and April 16, 2019. These letters were previously read on the floor of the Senate and the floor of the House of Representatives. In accordance with Resolution 2019-14, we are meeting in joint session today to consider the confirmation of the governor's appointees to the State Board of Education. I will outline the process we will follow. The chair will entertain a motion from the floor to confirm the governor's appointees. Discussion and debate will be permitted prior to the vote on the motion. Votes will be taken for all members of this body before the tally is decided and announced. Members of this body elected to the House of Representatives will use their previously assigned seating and corresponding electronic voting equipment to place their votes. Members elected to the Senate will designate their vote through the call of the roll. Representative Lewis, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I move the General Assembly confirm John B. Buxton, James Wendell Hall, and Donna A. Tipton Rogers to the State Board of Education.
Is there any discussion or debate on the motion to confirm the governor's appointments of John B. Buxton, James Wendell Hall, and Donna A. Tipton Rogers to the State Board of Education? Representative Kidwell, for what purpose do you... Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Senator Ballard, back there in the back, is rising. Senator Ballard, for what purpose do you rise?
Speak to the motion.
Senator Ballard, you have the floor to speak to the motion.
Ladies and gentlemen and members, before us today, we do have the list of names that were just read off to you. We have met and spent time with each of these nominees and found them each to be qualified for the role of board member. They appear to be without conflicts of interest and willing to follow the laws of our state and serve the best interests of our students. Mr. Buxton is currently serving on the State Board of Education and has extensive experience in education policy, including prior service as our Deputy State Superintendent of Public Instruction. He collaborated on the excellent Public Schools Act legislation that, before being vetoed, received bipartisan support in both the House and Senate earlier this year. Ms. Tipton Rogers is a longtime president of Tri-County Community College in Murphy and has served on numerous state education boards and commissions. Mr. Hall has served as an interim superintendent or assistant superintendent for four North Carolina school districts. He's led a distinguished career in education and has served multiple terms as chair of the Hertford County Board of Education. So, ladies and gentlemen, I urge your support of these nominees and ask that you please vote yes on the motion to confirm.
Representative Horn, for what purpose do you rise?
To speak to the motion.
You have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President. I echo the comments of my colleague from the Senate, Senator Ballard. I note that the nominees as put forward represent a diversity of opinions, a diversity of perspectives, a diversity of experience, and a diversity of geographic location across our state. I ask for your support for these nominees.
Any further discussion or debate? Hearing none, the question for the body is confirmation of the governor's appointments of John B. Buxton, James Wendell Hall, and Donna A. Tipton Rogers to the State Board of Education. All in favor of the motion will vote aye, opposed will vote no. The clerk will call the roll for the members elected to the Senate.
Alexander of Wake. Alexander of Cleveland.
Aye.
Ballard.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blue.
Aye.
Britt.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Bergen.
Aye.
Chaudhry.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Daniel.
Aye.
Davis of Pitt.
Aye.
Davis of Macon.
Aye.
Vivier.
Aye.
Edwards. Fitch.
Aye.
Ford.
Aye.
Fushi.
Aye.
Gallimore.
Aye.
Garrett.
Aye.
Gunn.
Aye.
Harrington. Heiss. Horner.
Aye.
Jackson of Sampson.
Jackson of Mecklenburg.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Kravick.
Aye.
Lowe.
Aye.
Marcus.
Aye.
McInnes. McKissick.
Aye.
Muhammad.
Aye.
Newton.
Aye.
Nickel.
Aye.
Perry.
Aye.
Peterson. Rabin.
Aye.
Robinson.
Aye.
Sanderson.
Aye.
Sawyer.
Aye.
Searcy.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Steinberg.
Aye.
Tillman.
Aye.
Van Dyne.
Aye.
Waddell.
Aye.
Wells.
Aye.
Woodard.
Members elected to the House will now vote electronically. All in favor of the motion to confirm the governor's appointments of John B. Buxton, James Wendell Hall, and Donna A. Tipton Rogers to the State Board of Education will vote aye. Opposed, the vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. And 40 members of this body voted in the affirmative. 8 members of this body voted in the negative. The motion is adopted, and John B. Buxton, James Wendell Hall, and Donna A. Tipton Rogers are confirmed by the General Assembly to the State Board of Education, and the governor will be notified. The business for which this joint session was convened has been completed. Speaker Moore is now recognized.
Mr. President, I move that the joint session now be dissolved.
Speaker Moore moves, seconded by Senator Berger, that the joint session be dissolved. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the joint session is now dissolved.
House Bill 1001, the clerk will read.
Representatives Bowles, Murphy, and Carson Smith. House Bill 1001, a bill to be entitled Raise the Age Funding, General Assembly of North Carolina Annexed.
Who's handling this bill? The gentleman from Henderson, Representative McGrady, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In 2007, the legislature passed the Raise the Age Law. For those that weren't here, until the passage of that law, North Carolina was one of only 2 states that treated 16 and 17-year-olds as adults within the criminal justice system. What the bill basically did is it moved 16 and 17-year-olds into the juvenile justice system. Moving 16 and 17-year-olds to the juvenile justice system couldn't be done in one fell swoop. And the reason for that is it comes with a cost. The juvenile justice system is more intense, changing the policy didn't change the money. And for those that were on the floor when we passed that bill, after many years of debate, actually, we made a commitment that we would proceed to fund it. And the funding was anticipated over a 3-year period. We started that funding last year. And in this recently passed and vetoed budget, year 2 and 3 of the funding is there. Now, what's in this bill is not all the funding, because there are capital funding needs that are in a different portion of the budget than is here. But what this does is fills in the people needs. Again, for those that were here, we heard from DAs, we heard from judges, we heard from others, people within the juvenile justice system that, you know, just can't put 16 and 17 year olds into the system without adding people and adding space. And so we're building a new detention facility. And this bill largely gets us where we need to be by hiring additional juvenile detention center personnel, by adding additional assistant DAs, by adding additional district court judges, by adding positions within the Division of Juvenile Justice. The money is here to try to increase bed capacity. And I would say to members that the bill is very time sensitive. We really needed to have done this back at the start of the fiscal year. The bill, as it is here, has been agreed to by the Senate. And I sent out a message to all the members today, reflecting the fact that this piece of the bill actually goes beyond the monies that were originally requested by the governor back earlier in the year, providing more money for JCPCs, providing a little more money for DAs and district court judges. So I would urge a green vote on this bill. Having changed the law, we now need to fund the law that we changed. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Members, the chair is in possession of three amendments, one from Representative Brewer, one from Representative Jackson, one from Representative McGee. The chair is going to rule those three amendments out of order for the same reason. The chair would direct, and the chair has confirmed this with staff, if the members will look at the first page of the bill, it says that this is a bill to be entitled an act consistent with House Bill 966 of the 2019 regular session, providing the resources necessary to implement the legislation known as Raise the Age. And the issue with all three of those amendments is that they are not consistent with House Bill 966. So the chair isn't weighing into whether their chair believes they're good or bad amendments at all, but just simply that they are inconsistent with the bill. So that would be the ruling of the chair. If any member wishes to appeal that, we can do it all in one swoop if anybody wants to do that. For what purpose, gentlemen from Wake, Representative Jackson Rice.
Mr. Speaker, I can't speak to the other two members, but I would like to appeal the ruling as to my amendment and would ask to be heard on that.
Just in the interest of time, Representative Brewer, does the gentleman wish his amendment to be appealed as well or no?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Speaker.
And Representative McGee, gentlemen wish to have it? Okay, then we'll just, for the sake of time, Representative Jackson, gentlemen, is recognized to appeal the decision as to the ruling on all three of those amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I understand the Speaker's ruling is based upon the word consistent in the title of the bill, but I think it's important that we read the entire title of the bill. It says, an act consistent with House Bill 966 of the 2019 regular session, providing the resources necessary to implement the legislation known as Raise the Age. And so I have no problems with the part of the bill that fund the JCPC and all the other things that are necessary. The part I have a problem with is how we're giving out new ADAs and how we're giving out new judges. And my amendment would have simply not taken anything from anybody, because I would agree with Representative McGrady that we have a great need in our court system. And I can't stand up here really and argue that any of you don't have a need in your county for a new clerk or a new assistant district attorney or ADA or a new judge. I can't make that argument. I don't practice law in your counties, and so I don't know. It appears to me, looking at the workload formula, we have a lot of needs across the state. However, that's not what the title of the bill says. The bill says we're going to do it as necessary to implement the legislation known as Raise the Age. Well, we haven't even considered the impact of Raise the Age in deciding where to put these judges and these DAs. In my county, Wake County, we had the second highest number of 16 and 17-year-olds in adult court. So these are kids, 16 and 17 year old, coming through district court, and a judge is spending a minute or 2 minutes taking a plea, signing a deferral agreement, and they're on their way. And now every one of these 16 and 17 year olds will be going through juvenile court, where they will get a lot more time spent on each individual case. But we're not sending these ADAs and these judges to the counties that will be greatly impacted by Raise the Age. We're doing it as we've always done it, for partisanship or for partisan reasons. And that's why when you look at the chart, we tend to skip counties when we look at need. In fact, if you just considered need on giving out 16 ADAs, Guilford County would get 7 of those because they have the greatest need by far across the state. And so I asked to appeal the speaker's ruling because I think it's important that we think about the counties and how are they going to be impacted by this Raise the Age. And to the extent we have limited resources, which I think we all recognize that we do, do we make best use of that by giving them out to the counties that need them the most and not to the counties that are represented by powerful people on both sides in the House and the Senate of the legislature?
For what purpose? The gentleman from Henderson, Representative McGrady, rise.
To speak on the, I guess it's a motion.
The gentleman is recognized to speak to the appeal of the decision. The chair.
Were I to concede every point that the minority leader makes, the fact remains that very explicitly in the Majeed Amendment, it changes the title. Just look at the amendment, you'll see it there. With respect to the Jackson and Brewer amendments, because of the way the changes are made there, you're changing the dollar amount of the spend, which is what makes it inconsistent with the budget that we previously passed. So I would urge members to uphold the ruling of the chair.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Majeed, rise?
Yes, sir, to address the appeal.
The gentleman's recognized.
The bottom line for this appeal for members of the House, in Mecklenburg County, the bottom line is public safety. Currently in the Mecklenburg County court system, it has far more cases than we can effectively handle. Mecklenburg County has been dismissing 70% of its weapons charge cases because we don't have staffing to handle the workload. Many of the persons who avoid punishment in their cases go on to be arrested for more serious crimes, including murder. We are in a crisis mode in Mecklenburg, and the Raise the Age requirement will only aggravate the public safety conundrum that we are facing in Mecklenburg County. And so it's a real situation for us. I served on the Agriculture Committee. One of the main reasons I served, because I wanted to understand what was going on in the agriculture community. This is an urban problem. I want you to understand that we're in crisis mode and we need help.
For our purpose, gentleman from Richmond, Representative Brewer Rice.
Briefly speak on the motion.
The gentleman's recognized.
This does add resources, I believe, that's consistent with the bill on my amendment. What mine will do is take all but 4 prosecutorial districts, put them at staffing at 100% of the workload formula. The workload formula does not take into account the Raise the Age, and it does not take into account what we've done on the Victims' Rights Amendment. So mine just brings all but 4 to 100%. Which I think is where we ought to be for everybody as we start down this road. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Orange, Representative Meyer, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wonder if I could ask Representative Jackson from Wake a question.
This gentleman from Wake yield.
I yield.
He yields.
Representative Jackson, you brought up the positions and the allotments. Can you give us some explanation of is the money for the positions here? Is it in the budget? Is there additional money?
Representative Meyer, thank you for the question. I understand from my discussion with staff that nothing like this that we would run would be out of order as far as putting the budget out of balance because the entire budget hasn't passed. And, of course, that means the tax cuts and other things that take away from available revenue hadn't passed, but also, you know, there's been an update to the consensus revenue forecast, and so there's an additional couple hundred million dollars more in revenue than even we had available when we put together the conference report. So the money's there, and it's not going to take away from anybody. Thank you for the question.
For what purpose, gentlemen, from Mecklenburg, Representative McGee to rise?
Speak to appeal for a second time.
The gentleman actually can, under our rules, can only debate and appeal the decision once, although Representative Jackson kind of did twice through the question, but that's okay. For what purpose does the gentleman from Forsyth, Representative Montgomery, rise?
Tax Representative McGee to question.
The chair's not going to recognize. Come on, guys. Further discussion, further debate. If not, the question before the House. Should the member's appeal of the chair's ruling be sustained? All those in favor of the member's appeal and overturning the chair will vote aye. All those opposed to the appeal and sustaining the decision of the chair will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 49 having voted in the affirmative and 55 in the negative. The decision of the chair stands. Further discussion, further debate on the bill. For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Jackson, rise?
Speak on the bill.
Gentleman is recognized.
Thank you. Thank you. I wanted to thank the bill sponsor for his hard work on the raise the age, and I just want to make sure it's clear because I'm going to vote against it today, the bill today, just because I have an issue with how the judges and the DAs are given out, and I am scared to death of what raise the age is going to do to our court system here in Wake County, because we're not providing the resources, and we did just pass a victim's right bill, and I actually have already seen it in action in my courthouse. We have a courtroom called Disposition Court, where it is designed so that officers are not present, and you can go anytime between 7:30 and 3:30 the day of the court, and it's designed so that people can come in and show their registration, show their insurance, show their driver's license, get their speed reduced, show their driving certificate, whatever, and be done. But a lot of officers put things in there and try to make it convenient for people who have tickets. Well, I noticed that 2 weeks ago, the DA's office, they get a lot of shoplifting cases in there the first time, and they started telling people they could no longer take guilty pleas in there for shoplifting. And I thought that was odd. So I asked the DA, I said, well, why can't you do that anymore? And he said, well, Walmart has a right to be heard about the what happens with the case, right? It was their stuff that got stolen. So they have a right to be present. And so we've got to put it on a court date. And I started thinking about that and how that's going to impact hundreds of cases a day that come through that courtroom. And then on top of that, we're going to take all these juveniles who are charged with these cases that go through these deferral programs that a DA actually says, here's the file, take it to first offenders. First offenders does all the paperwork. They bring it back. The DA puts her signature on it, hands it up to the judge who puts his signature on it, and that's the end of their involvement. Now these DAs are going to be sitting in juvenile court with a clerk sitting there and a judge sitting there and hearing about supervision and about curfew and how they're doing in school and all these things that I think are great and I think we should be doing for 16 and 17-year-olds, but we are setting ourselves up for failure without the resources. There's just no question about it. We are setting it up to be a disaster for our court system, and then we're going to decide who gets our limited resources based on who's the committee chair or who knows who or who has the most pull in negotiation. And I think that's just wrong. I want to make sure that you understand, though, that I'm not arguing again that any of you don't need more resources in your county, because I know that it is a fact that North Carolina spends less per residence on its courts than any other state-funded system in this country. And I know that Mecklenburg and Wake counties have fewer prosecutors than almost any urban county of their size nationally, according to a Charlotte Observer investigation. And so, again, I want to advocate for two things. I want to advocate for more resources for our court system, but I want to advocate for the resources that we have to be done on a fair basis and be based upon who is really going to be impacted by Raise the Age, and not just about politics. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the lady from Durham, Representative Maury, rise?
Thank you. To speak on the bill.
Ladies recognized.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Raise the Age has been a topic for over 20 years in our state. And my position is Representative McGrady has done a masterful job shepherding this through. This is a landmark piece of legislation. For North Carolina to have been the last state to criminalize a 16-year-old for littering is unconscionable. And that happens. When I was a judge, I remembered seeing a 16-year-old who littered a gum wrapper. She was given a citation. She didn't understand what it was. She threw it away. She didn't come to court. She was arrested in school for failure to appear in court on a littering charge. We're really facing the future of 20,000 kids that can be affected by this by saying, you're 16, you're 17, you're impulsive, your brain development has not fully developed until you're 25. We have finally come a long way, as every other state in this country. Let's deal with these kids appropriately. So I think the funding is here. Every one of your counties has a JCPC. There's almost $10 million allotted over the next 2 years to help your counties provide the resources for these families and kids. And we're talking basically minor offenses. So for all the advocates, law enforcement, judges, prosecutors, the staff, legislatures that got behind this bill, it's taken a long time, but it's a remarkable piece of legislation, and I hope you will support it. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman, rise?
Speak on the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I originally opposed Raise the Age. I still think it's a bad idea. If we brought that to the floor today, I would not vote for it. I was opposed to it. My sheriff at the time was opposed to it. I think my current sheriff probably would have been opposed to it, and my DA was opposed to it. However, that's passed. The majority voted it and put it into law. So I agree, we have to fund it. You pass the law, we have to pay for it. So I don't have a problem with that. I sympathize with folks on the other side of the aisle about thinking they needed some judges that they're not getting and that sort of thing. Because in 2017, I begged for new ADA. And it was in the budget. And right before it came to the floor, it got pulled. So I didn't get it. This year I asked for it in the House budget. Didn't get it. Senate gave us the ADA and the new district court judge that we need. So it's in this bill. So I understand where you folks are coming from on that. And, you know, I have to vote to get the ADA and the district court judge that I've been trying to get. And, you know, maybe y'all can try to get it in a technical corrections bill later on, maybe something like that. So I sympathize with your position on that. But I think this is a good bill. Maybe it falls short in some areas, but for the most part, it's a good bill, and I think we need to vote for it. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Cunningham, rise?
To speak to the bill.
The lady has the floor.
First, I would like to ask Representative McGrady a question, please.
I'm sorry, who was the question? Representative McGrady, gentleman yield?
I yield.
He yields.
Thank you. Representative McGrady, what is in our revenue surplus right now?
I don't have that figure, but we there was recently a joint forecast that told us that we had more money than we had when we started out.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that, Representative McGrady.
Lady has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I heard Representative Moore talk about the $10 million. And Raise the Age, we have been working on it for quite a while. But if we don't put the appropriate funds there in the judicial system to manage that, we're going to run into a block. So looking at the $10 million, I don't know how long that's going to last after we initially start up, because this is going to be ongoing forever and ever, and so we know that more money is going to have to be appropriated. So what I'm saying is I hope that we're not doing the system any more injustice by not appropriately funding it from the start. So like Representative McGee said, we are in trouble in Mecklenburg County. We do need those additional people, and especially with the Raise the Age coming along. So I think that as we go along, yes, I'm going to support it because I'd rather have something than have nothing. But as we move forward, I hope that we will look a little bit closer and say, what each county needs and not fund it based on who is representing that county or that district, but base it on the needs of the citizens in every county of the state. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Richmond, Representative Brewer, rise?
To speak on the bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
In my almost 35 years in the court system, there have been two pieces of legislation that have been transformative in how we've done things in my district. The first was the family courts, which made a profoundly positive difference in the outcomes for families for cases to be done. And the second one is this, and this is going to have longer and more lasting impact. I think what Representative McCready and all the others that have worked on this bill have done a remarkable job to move us forward on raising the age. I think it will benefit juveniles not only now but for the rest of time in the state of North Carolina. It's a positive move forward. The only thing I would hope for is that when the opportunity comes to look at where more resources go, is that we look at giving the resources for assistant district attorneys and judges. This would have been the perfect opportunity with this legislation and all the extra work it's going to bring everybody in the state to the 100% funding level on the workload formulas. Get everybody at the same starting point, and then we see where the needs are going forward. I know since I sat in here as a member of the sergeant-at-arms staff, politics has always played a part in where assistant DAs and judges have gone. That's just simply how things have gone. But this is a different situation. This is not seeing where we want to expand on what we've got. This is a situation where we see on a need that we need to make. And I hope as we go forward, we will try to meet those needs and to give everybody at the same starting point on this. You know, in my district, which is the only one I can specifically point to, we've been in the top five for need for some time. As chief judge, I worked with our district attorney to combine courts in some counties, to eliminate courts, to give his staff time to prepare to do the things they need to do in court. With the Victims' Rights Amendment, they're going to be spending more time needing to get away. I believe we've exhausted every non-staffing remedy that there is available in my district to meet those needs. I'm sure I'm not the only one. And I hope as we go forward that we look to address that. But I do support the legislation. I think it's a remarkable step forward.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Randolph, Representative McNeil, rise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and members. Just wanted to briefly remind you of a couple of things as far as raise the age. Most of you know my background. You know, it's law enforcement. And I've been involved in the criminal justice system my whole life. So it has a special place in my heart that we have enough deputy clerks, that we have enough judges, that we have enough ADAs. Do we need more resources in the state of North Carolina? Certainly. We always need more resources. We also need to make better use of the resources that we have. I just want to point out that when it comes to raise the age and the resources, I just want to point out that in the governor's recommended budget, he recommended 3 district court judges, 4 assistant district attorneys, 3 legal assistants, and 3 deputy clerks. When we passed this through the House, we expanded that to 7 district court judges, 16 assistant district attorneys. We stayed the same with 3 legal assistants and 7 deputy clerks. So we more than doubled what the governor recommended in his budget on a lot of these areas. Now, during the budget process, I talked to someone on the governor's staff, and I asked him, I said, you know, what is your thinking, you know, because their funding and for raise the age was a lot lower in a lot of areas than what the juvenile justice system wanted. And basically the answer I got from them was that, well, this takes effect in December and we'll be back in May. And that gives us time to assess what's going to happen. So you're talking basically about 5 to 6 months. Yes, raise the age is going to start December the 1st. We all know that. But I think by the time we get back in May, we're going to have some indication, Representative Jackson, as to exactly what the impact is on Wake County, on Randolph County, and Guilford County, and other ones. So hopefully this is something that we can come back in May and take care of. So I would certainly hope everyone would vote for this. You may not like where some of these things are going, but I think if you look, everyone that's getting something, with the exception of maybe one or two places, is below average in their staffing. And in closing, I just want to, because it's been mentioned twice. One, Representative Jackson made a direct reference to the Mecklenburg, to the Charlotte Observer, piece. And, another one made a cited statistics that was in the Charlotte Observer, article and tried to kind of make you believe that they were saying it was because the system was underfunded. I just want to include a quote from that Charlotte Observer article from Mecklenburg District Attorney Spencer Merriweather. Said his prosecutors often have to dismiss charges because they lack evidence. Some witnesses aren't credible. Others go missing. And some come up and refuse to testify. So to say that the dismissal of cases in Mecklenburg County is totally because they're understaffed, you need to look at the article and see what the district attorney, the assistant district attorney there said. There's several reasons that cases are dismissed. Maybe some of them are dismissed for lack of ADAs, but a lot of them are dismissed for other reasons. So it's still a good bill. I appreciate it. I would hope that you would vote green.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Alexander, rise?
excuse me, to speak on the bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
I'm planning to vote green, but I did want to point out something that Representative McNeil had started on. He started sharing with you a fairly lengthy article that showed up in the Charlotte Observer. Part four of that article, though, talks about in some extensive detail what some of the problems are. And one of the problems that keeps reoccurring is a lack of resources. Right now, we're spending about $550 million per annum on our justice system. We should be spending twice that, and which would make it a billion-dollar commitment. In Mecklenburg County, right now, we are shy about 20 judges. The district attorney's office is shy about 60-some positions. You can find similar issues in the other urban counties in North Carolina. I say this to say that what's in this bill is a step in the right direction. But it is only a step. It is a minuscule step. And that if we are serious about meeting these needs, then we're going to have to take a much bigger bite than the money that's in this bill. But that's why I can vote for the bill, because it is a step in the right direction.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative McGee, rise?
To speak on the bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, there's been a lot of discussion about this formula. As relating to Mecklenburg County, is skewed because they stated that we have more than our allotted positions. But we pay, our city council and our county commissioner pay for those positions. So basically, if we could just get allotted to our position as far allotted the slots for Mecklenburg County, we'd be doing great. But that statement is skewed because we paid for those positions for the city council and the county commission to address the backlog. Thank you, sir.
For what purpose does the lady from Forsyth, Representative Terry, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm just trying to revisit what I read about this bill.
Is the lady wishing to debate the bill?
Debate the bill. Yes. But First and foremost, I have a question that I'd like to ask any of the bill sponsors.
Let's start that first. If the lady wants to direct the question to Representative McGrady, Representative McGrady, does the gentleman yield?
I yield.
Yields.
Thank you very much, Representative. I'm listening to this discussion regarding the cost and the and those who feel underfunded and those who feel that they may not be beneficiaries of this at all. And I can recall something about electronic courts, which is something that is intriguing to me as we speak about the costs of these things. And my question is there anything in the Raise the Age that lends itself to our using technology with electronic courts so that we diminish the need for the personnel or either use the money for personnel that is required to go through the morass of everything that is required in the courts by using technology?
Thank you for the question. Not to my knowledge within this legislation, the reference, your memory is correct that the discussion about electronic courts was one that was debated within the larger budget with respect to, you know, more issues than just Raise the Age, and I believe actually appeared in one version of the budget. I don't remember if it was the House or the Senate version at some point. What I'll do, though, in further response is I'll touch base with staff, some of which are here, and ask them to directly respond to your question. But I'm not aware that there's anything specifically in the Raise the Age provisions related to electronic courts.
Thank you very much. With that, I'd simply like to say...
May I recognize to debate the bill?
May I debate? Thank you. I'd simply like to say that in an age within which we are living, it appears to me that it would make very much sense to look toward the future for determining how we might be able to save costs and operate more efficiently, particularly with the volume, and perhaps even, I hope not, but the increased volume of the need for personnel to take care of the issues of the court that we look to technology to help us to do that. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Durham, Representative Black, rise?
To speak to the bill. The
lady has four.
Thank you very much. Under Part 5 of this bill, it talks about adding additional resources to work with the juveniles. Juveniles who are already in the homes and juveniles who will be returning back to the community. I think that's a great plan. And I like that you've added additional funding for school counselors and others. The counselors will be working with the young people while they're in the juvenile detention center. It's very important for us not just to house juveniles who have done some crime in the community, but to also make sure that we're doing our very best to make these young people become citizens that we can be proud of, taxpaying citizens, and some of these young people can turn their lives around if given the opportunity to have people to help them. So by adding the additional school counselors who will be working with these young people, not only on their emotional problems, but also getting them back into school, getting them into community college, getting them into jobs, perhaps we will begin to save some of these young people and save generations of people. So I appreciate what you've done and commend you for all of what's in the bill, but especially Section 5 of the bill.
For what purpose, gentleman from Henderson, Representative McGrady, rise.
To speak a second time on the bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
I just want to make two points. First, as I earlier mentioned, this bill is very time sensitive. We really should have been funding these positions back beginning July 1st, and I really would like to get them funded beginning early in October. Secondly, I just, you know, want to point out, I guess maybe this is the obvious, but if you vote no on the bill, you're voting to not put any money towards anything related to Raise the Age. And I understand that, you know, there can be differences of opinion with respect to allocations of a DA here or a district judge or even several district judges and several DAs. But the total amount of money there is not real significant. And moreover, it's more money than we were asked to provide at the time that ask was made. I think the funding of DAs and judges and deputy clerks and are going to be a continuing issue because they're not fully and adequately funded, but we need to do this now. And so I'd really urge you to vote yes on the bill and let's get it going. The Senate has agreed to it, and hopefully we can get the funds out the door as quickly as possible.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the passage of House Bill 1001 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 104 having voted in the affirmative and 1 in the negative. House Bill 1001 passed the second reading. Will without objection. Hear it a third time.
Joseph of North Carolina next.
Question for the House. Passage of House Bill 1001 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Bill 1001 having passed third reading is ordered sent to the Senate. Senate Bill 250. The clerk will read.
Senators Crawford, Sanderson, and Bergen. Senate Bill 250, a bill to be entitled Remove Foreign Citizens from Voting Polls. The General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Gentleman from Oslo, Representative Cleveland, recognize and debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 250 will allow the Chief District Court Judge to delegate jury excuses to the clerk of court with their agreement. Require clerks to maintain records of persons asking to be excused from jury duty due to disqualification. They'll be required to maintain those records for the biennium, and they'll share any disqualifications that pertain to non-citizenship with the State Board of Elections. And the bill provides that the State Board will keep those records for 4 years, and it also provides a process for the individuals to dispute the idea that they were non-citizens when they registered to vote, and it'll require the State Board, if anyone voted, to report them to their local district attorneys. And it'll require the State Board to publish quarterly on its website the voter registration status of non-citizens reported by the clerk. And that, in a nutshell, is what it does.
What purpose does the lady from Guilford, Representative Harrison, rise?
To debate the bill.
The lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I have a lot of issues with this bill, and just want to raise a few of them. But I think we all agree that we don't want non-citizens, non-U.S. citizens voting in our elections, but that's not really a problem in our state. And the way the bill is drafted, it's going to disenfranchise a lot of eligible voters. So I cited this example, I guess this bill was on the floor maybe a month ago. There was a WREL study that investigated comparing juror and voter information and concluded that it led to mostly false or misleading matches. I think they found 2,000 that had been excused from the juror pool because of checking the non-citizen box, and not one of them was a non-U.S. citizen. Then in 2016, Kim Strack, the former director of the State Board, looked into matching names and citizenship status. Out of the 5 million votes cast in that election, 2016, there were 41 confirmed non-citizens, 41 out of 5 million. And many of those were mistaken because they had a green card and they thought they could vote. And so the way this works, you could have a green card holder, John Smith Sr. John Smith Jr. is actually a citizen because he was born here in the U.S. and resides in North Carolina, but is off at college. John Smith Sr. gets called to jury duty, checks the non-citizen form, and then his son gets the postcard, but he's off in college, so he doesn't return the postcard, and then he gets taken off the list the list maintenance, and it's a difficult procedure. It seems like there's some due process missing in terms of these voters being able to challenge the list maintenance and being removed from the voter files. The Board of Elections spoke at the Rules Committee, which I'm afraid I missed, but I got a letter with their concerns yesterday, and they are worried about the accuracy of the data and the matches that what might ensue, these false matches, and are concerned also about the fact that they've got this memorandum of understanding with the federal government and that this information is supposed to be confidential under federal law. And I had heard from speaking to the former lawyer for the State Board of Elections some concerns that he had about that because of the breach of that memorandum of understanding. And they're also, the state board is concerned about the safety of the voters who would be impacted by this legislation, who might be identified and then have groups go after these individuals who are actually eligible voters. And they're also concerned about the potential for costly litigation that challenges that would ensue as a result of this, challenges to the county boards, to the state boards, as a result of individuals being dropped from these, from the voter files. So I think, the fact that this isn't really a problem in our state, the fact that you're going to disenfranchise eligible voters, the fact that we're looking at costly litigation, that you're going to be targeting individuals who are actually eligible citizens, I think this is a problematic legislation. You're going to be putting unneeded burdens on the administration of this law, this proposed law. I think that this deserves a little bit more of a look, and I wish that we had actually incorporated some of the proposed language from the amendment that I was going to offer, but I'm going to refrain from offering today. But I do hope that you'll join me in voting no. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Richmond, Representative Brewer, rise?
See if the bill sponsor will yield for a question.
Representative Cleveland, does the gentleman yield?
I yield.
He yields.
Each clerk of court has a different method of sending summonses for jurors that include the questions that are sent back, and they're paid for by the individual counties. Since this bill mandates that AOC develop a uniform form to be used, was any inquiry made into compensating the counties for the monies they've already contracted to spend for this fiscal year, or is this just going to be an unfunded mandate that the counties are going to have to come back and appropriate more money for to come in compliance on January 1st with the new form?
When I talked with the Clerks Association at the time, and this was a couple years ago, several years ago, at that time I was told that the IT folks that were doing their systems, it would cost about $100 per county to upgrade them and gather this information.
All right. Mr. Speaker?
Yes, sir.
To speak on the bill.
Gentlemen's recognized to debate the bill.
I talked with I had four counties as chief judge. Each county did the systems differently. Three of the counties had a form that was about the size of an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper that listed the questions in different ways. Some of those counties made people come in to district court judge to be excused. They had to take time off of work, come in to present their excuse. Some of the counties had a procedure where you just fill out the form and send it in. Others was on a large postcard that was about the size of an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper folded in half. The counties are spending, and I have smaller counties in my area, $4,000 to $5,000 a year to contract with private vendors. Every one of them are going to have to be redone January 1st. I don't think we should be putting this cost onto those counties without compensating them for doing that. And therefore, I would move to send this to Appropriations Committee to see if we need to appropriate money to the counties so the counties are not having to bear the cost of the burden for changing the method and the forms, because some of these forms are going to be quite a significant change that's going to cause quite an expense to the counties. And since we're mandating one form rather than that AOC is doing, rather than simply the clerks complying with the mandates in the statute. That's the reason for my motion.
Well, the gentleman hasn't been recognized for a motion, but does the gentleman wish to make a motion?
I apologize, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to be recognized for that motion to move to send to appropriations to see if an appropriation needs to be made for these counties.
The gentleman from Richmond has moved that Senate Bill 250 be removed from the calendar and re-referred to the Committee on Appropriations. Representative Cleveland, does the gentleman wish to speak to the gentleman's motion to re-refer the bill?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman is recognized.
I do not see where this is going to be any kind of a large amount of money for any county. There's one vendor that represents, I think it's 92 counties in the state. And as I stated earlier, I was told it would be about $100 per county to comply with what we have to do. I, not being an IT person, I don't see where it really should cost that much, to be truthful. But I see no large expense to any county to comply with the requirements of this bill. The AOC is going to come up with the form. He's going to promulgate it to the counties, and they have it. And this will also help in continuity across the state in the way we handle our voter process, our process of getting jury individuals. It'll be consistent across the state. I would prefer the motion not live.
So a couple whites on. Representative Farnbow, is this on the bill? Is this to debate the bill or on this motion?
Debate the bill.
Okay. Representative Richardson, is this on the motion or is this on the bill? Gentlemen's recognized, debate the motion.
Mr. Speaker, may I ask the bill sponsor question first?
Certainly. Representative Cleveland, does the gentleman yield?
I yield.
He yields.
Representative Cleveland, it's my understanding reading this that this is not an affidavit. That when they go to fill out this form, they don't swear to this form. Is that correct? In other words, it's just...
I honestly do not know. I would assume they don't swear to fill out the form.
To debate...
Gentlemen's recognized to debate the... This is to debate the motion. Representative Richardson, to re-refer. Gentlemen's recognized.
Members, I think it would be a good idea if we're going to pass this. Having tried numerous jury trials, the biggest problem you have in doing a jury trial is picking a jury. People will say anything and do anything to get out of jury duty, even though it's the last American responsibility left. If we're going to do this, the form needs to be good, and the checking system needs to be good, and there certainly should be an appropriation to it. I think that the representative's motion is good, that we need to look into putting some form of affidavit on this form and verifying it, because I'm going to tell you, somebody wanting to not do jury duty will say or do anything to get out of the jury duty. They'll check that box only to come back when they go to vote to find out that they can't vote because they said they were a U.S. citizen, but it was an unsworn statement that they did at the time. If we're going to take somebody off the voter roll, and if we're going to take somebody off of jury duty, as sacred as both of those things are, it ought to be a sworn statement and done correctly, and it ought to be verified correctly, and therefore I think we should put an appropriation to it and have a standardized form that applies to all counties. This is a not well thought out bill, and it needs to go back to appropriations, be better thought out in an allocation doing it to make it statewide would be the proper thing.
Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose, Gentleman Rice?
I'd like to clarify something.
Gentleman's recognized, I guess, to debate the motion second time to re-refer.
And Representative Richardson's comments, he stated that individuals will be taken off the voter rolls. There's a process for that. It assures the state board and the county boards are run through this process, and it assures that any individual that is removed is not a citizen. There's nothing arbitrary about this whatsoever. There's a challenge done, and it's done in a very systematic way, so nobody is going to get removed from the voter rolls unless they can prove that he is not a citizen or she is not a citizen. So, and someone else also mentioned that. There is the challenge process, and it assures that nobody is removed from the voter rolls if they are a citizen.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Cumberland and Representative Richardson arise?
Debate it a second time.
The gentleman's recognized. Debate the motion a second time.
Folks, if we're going to go through this process, and I mean it is a involved process that takes basically two fundamental rights away, or could take two fundamental rights away, it should be a sworn-to statement that is taken very seriously. I'm telling you, people will do anything to get out of jury duty, and this is fraught with peril. It's just not well thought out.
I'm assuming Representative Farmbotham, Representative Cleveland, these members no longer debate on the re-referral. All right, if not, the question before the House is the motion to re-refer Senate Bill 250 to the Committee on Appropriations. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Corbin wish to vote. Clerk will, like the machine, record the vote. 49 having voted in the affirmative and 56 in the negative, the motion fails. Now on the bill, the lady from Wilson, Representative Farmer Butterfield, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask any of the primary sponsors of the bill a question.
Representative Cleveland's Jim Neal.
How are you?
Representative Cleveland, I know you said it was inexpensive to the counties to implement this, enforce this bill. What about the cost in terms of state dollars? Do we have a fiscal note for this bill?
Mm-hmm. I do not believe there's an additional cost of any amount to the state, and I do not have a fiscal note.
You do not have a fiscal note. Okay. Next question is, in terms of qualifications, if I may, Mr. Speaker.
Sorry, would you repeat the question, please?
Next question is, in terms of qualifications of prospective jurors, to be able to have a physical and mental competency. How do you determine that, and is there a cost to this?
This bill has nothing to do with the physical and mental competency of jurors. Mm-hmm.
The bill talks about follow-up.
Members are recognized to have a conversation about this bill.
Thank you. Thank you. The bill states that the juror qualifications for prospective jurors, qualifications of prospective jurors?
That is already law.
You're a U.S. citizen,
has
yes.
To do with this bill.
Mentally confident. How do you determine that? How is that determined?
That's in law now.
This is determined, sir.
I have no idea.
Thank you.
For what purpose, the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Cunningham, rise.
To ask the bill sponsor, Representative Cleveland, a couple of questions, please.
Representative Cleveland, gentlemen, yield.
I yield. Yes.
Thank you, Representative Cleveland. I have a concern about security. Once the person says that they are not a citizen, where does that information go? Mr. Speaker.
Well, it goes to the Board of Elections.
Thank you. Follow-up question? Thank you. So if it goes to the Board of Election, where does IT come in to put security in place so that information is not available to everyone that wants to go and look, and specifically available only to the State Board of Elections?
When it goes to the Board of Elections, it's public information.
Follow up. In the time that we're in right now with confidentiality statements, HIPAA statements in place for medical and certain things, would you not think that some type of security should be in place so that those citizens, if they are not legal citizens of the United States or state or whatever, that information is not just public just because they don't want to do jury duty?
No.
Thank you.
For what purpose, the lady from Durham, Representative Morey, rise.
Thank you. To debate the bill.
Please recognize.
Members, what I'm afraid is this bill is just a voter suppression bill. We're using the jury system to check who's a citizen, not for serving on a jury, but to vote. Okay, that's already being done. Any juror pool is pulled from DMV records and voter registration records. To have a driver's license, you have to have a Social Security card. To be a voter, you've already established that. So all the names that go to all the counties come from the DMV, who pull from those records. Those are citizens. Now we're saying to the counties, now we're sending you the summons, jurors. And not only does it say a citizen of the United States, it says a citizen of the state. There is no such thing as a citizen of the state. You're a resident of the state. You're a citizen of the United States. So it's very confusing. I have a copy of our jury summons out of Durham, North Carolina. The very first thing to check if you want to be excused or disqualified, one, are not a citizen of North Carolina. Proof of address outside is required. It doesn't say a thing about citizen of the United States. They're a voter. They're registered. They may have just moved from another state. That is very confusing. These types of issues not only can be confusing to people who are marking them, as Representative Richardson said, to avoid jury service in the first place, we're also changing the method in which we excuse jurors. Right now, the Chief District Court judge looks at all the jury excuses. It's our job. We go over it. We approve it. We deny it for one of the listed reasons. This bill is saying, well, let's add the clerks of court to do it. How many assistant clerks of court are there that can also assume that role? This process of jury service, which you can get arrested if you don't come, if you're not excused, is extremely important. And to take that sole power from the judge or the trial court administrator and now say, oh, clerks can do it, and if the clerk is busy, any of your assistant clerks can now do this. And the impact is, if your name is sent to the Board of Elections erroneously because it's that you marked, I'm not a citizen of the state or the United States, the outcome is you're removed. And not only are you removed, your name is on a public record. That can lead to harassment. That can lead to identity theft. There are all kinds of issues that this bill raises that have not been addressed, have not really been discussed, the cost. So I encourage you, let's work on it a different way. But the object, to suppress the vote through a jury service form, is not the way to go. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman Rice,
speak on the bill?
The gentleman is recognized.
First of all, Mr. Speaker, I consider myself, number one, a citizen of the Kingdom of Heaven. Secondly, a citizen of the state of North Carolina. And third, a citizen of the United States. But as to this bill, I don't see how it's suppressing anybody's right to vote. To me, the issue is people lying about citizenship in order to get out of jury duty. That's the main focus of this to me. And, you know, I think the focus ought to be on tell the truth when you're called for jury duty. And don't try to get out of it by claiming you're not a citizen if you are. And if you are, you know, why would you want to claim that you're not? People all over the world want to become U.S. citizens. Why would you want to claim you're not unless you're just trying to shirk your duty? And we ought to deal with that. We ought to say if you're going to lie about your citizenship in reverse order, say that you're not a citizen, just to get out of voting or just to get out of serving on jury, that does create a problem, and you shouldn't be able to get away with doing that. It's nothing about suppressing voter rights.
For what purpose the lady from New Hanover, Representative Butler, rise?
To ask the bill sponsor a question, please.
Representative Cleveland, Jim Yield.
I yield.
Yields.
Representative, I just wondered what was behind the publication of these folks' personal information. I mean, why are we requiring that their private information be published?
The bill doesn't require any personal information to be published at all. You're talking about the web?
Yes.
That all it requires is a name.
Follow up, please.
Chairman, yield. He yields.
I yield.
Well, I've seen an email from some of the authorities at the State Board of Election that say that it will compel them to publish name, address, date of birth, and other personal and private information. And I know that many of us in this body don't share ideological similarities on everything, but I think the right to privacy is something that we probably all value. And I have great concerns if people's personal private information is going to be published before the State Board of Election has the ability to cross-check to confirm that that person is in fact not a citizen. I'm wondering why we're publishing that in advance.
The information you're referring to is not going to be published. Nothing will be published until after the board and the county boards complete their investigations. At that time, that will be published.
Follow up, Mr. Speaker.
Gentlemen, yield.
I yield.
Yields.
But it will appear on the website. When I say published, Representative, I mean available on the Internet.
I honestly don't think it's going to be on the Internet. It'll be a communications between the clerks and the State Board of Elections. It will not be on the Internet.
Just one last follow-up, Mr. Speaker.
Gentlemen, you?
So that if counsel for the State Board of Elections suggests that that is their interpretation of it, they would be misinformed?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
For what purpose the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Motion to table. Motion to table the discussion. May I speak to the motion?
Well, there's nothing to table. There's a gentleman moving to table the bill. First off, the gentleman has to be recognized. The gentleman has stated he would like to be recognized for a motion. The gentleman stated he'd like to be recognized for a motion to table the bill. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Motion having not been seconded, motion will die for lack of a second. For what purpose the lady from Orange, Representative Insko, rise?
To ask the bill sponsor a question.
Representative Cleveland, the gentleman yield.
I yield.
Yields.
Thank you, Representative Cleveland. I'm a former county commissioner, and I have to read this bill with that information that there's a lot you're asking the local boards to do. And is there any fiscal note about how much this money would cost counties?
I've already stated there's no fiscal note, and we're not asking the local boards to do any more than they would do with a normal, a normal confrontation with a voter. What would you say when a voter is contested, it's the same process more or less. So they're really not doing anything extraordinary.
Follow up.
Gentlemen, yield.
Yield.
He yields.
Thank you. As I read this bill, I perceive that there would be many more people that have to go through this process than what now goes through the process, and that it would actually take more time. So I'm concerned about the additional cost for counties.
The only time they will go through the process if the individual contests that he is not a U.S. citizen. That's the only time they'll go through the process.
Thank you. May I speak on the bill?
Please recognize debate the bill.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, we are adding responsibilities at the local level. It will take additional time. It will take additional money. We are asking our local counties to increase their property taxes or else have people work overtime. We are not considering what we're doing to local governments when we pass bills like this. I hope you will hear from your county commissioners. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Buncombe, Representative Turner, rise?
To ask the bill sponsor a question.
Representative Cleveland, gentleman yield.
Yeah,
he yields.
Thank you, Representative. The question I have, I'm going back to the issue of the publication. I'm back here, Representative Cleveland, corner, far back corner. The question I have is regarding the publication of information of folks, and I'm going to go and refer to page 4, lines 18 through 21, where it says, the State Board of Elections shall publish on its website quarterly the voter registration status of each person reported as provided in subdivision 1 of the subsection as disqualified from jury duty on the basis the person is not a citizen of the United States. Now, I was a little confused with some of the back and forth between yourselves and Representative Butler about the publication of private information. And so as I read this, the State Board of Elections shall publish on its website that private information or names and other personal and private information will be published publicly on the website. Could you clarify what the practical application of that section would be?
Is to have a public list available to the public of individuals who have claimed to be, that were on the voters list that were not citizens of the United States.
Follow up?
Gentlemen, yield.
Yield.
Yields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Do you know which or what personal or private information will be listed, what identifying information will be listed on the website, and what the purpose of making that information publicly available would be?
As far as I know, the only thing to be listed is their name, and it'll be a list for the use of the general public if they desire to go there.
So, follow up, Mr. Speaker. So, whether I'm fortunate or not, there's another gentleman in the Buncombe County area named Brian Turner. He's a great piano player. I get lots of calls, people asking me to play weddings. I typically decline most of the time because I'm in Raleigh. But if the name Brian Turner were to appear on that published website, people wouldn't know if that was me or the other Brian Turner or some other Brian Turner that might live in Buncombe County. And so I guess I'm questioning what the value or what the purpose of putting that name without any other identifying information on the website publicly would be, or if there's going to be additional information that would be able to allow people to differentiate between me and piano player Brian.
I honestly cannot stand here and tell you how you're going to differentiate. I really don't know. They could put my name there, and I would be in the same pickle.
Follow up, Mr. Speaker?
Sure. And Representative Turner, there is a piano in the chapel if the gentleman is interested as well. Gentlemen, ask another question. Representative Cleveland, gentlemen, yield.
If any of you have ever heard me play, you don't want me touching that piano. But I go to the question of, I'm just trying to understand, Representative Cleveland, what the goal is in providing this list of names publicly without any specific identifying information or really why we would be doing that, why would we be going through the effort, what the purpose of the list is. To me, it just seems an unnecessary intrusion. And I'm just curious, in your opinion, as the bill sponsor and primary sponsor, what value do you think this section of the bill brings to the overall process and clarity around jury duty selection and qualification?
I think it provides the public with information on individuals who are doing or who are trying or on the list as voters that don't belong there. It also shows the public that the boards of election are, in fact, pursuing what the law says for them to pursue.
Even though the public would have no ability to differentiate, say, between me and any other Brian Turner that's out there.
They wouldn't differentiate between me either.
So someone may erroneously think that I'm no longer qualified to vote or that I'm no longer a citizen of the United States, even though I was born here.
If anyone knows you, they know you're a citizen of the United States, so I don't see where that would be a problem.
To speak on the bill, Mr. Speaker.
Gentleman's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the answers that Representative Cleveland has provided. And I guess my big concern is, as we're looking at creating a list, and I think that we've got to be very careful when we start to provide lists of people with and what that purpose is. I know there's been a lot of concern over the years about people putting mugshots online, about other lists throughout the history of our country that maybe we are not so proud of, black lists in various industries, other lists throughout history. And so I just worry about what the goal is here with this list. I worry about the cost of maintaining this list, of verifying this list, of seeing your name on this list and not knowing how do I get my name off this list, or is it even me that they're talking about? I think that a public shaming type of list is sort of what this feels like. I don't really see the value in it, and I have serious concerns if we can't fully grasp what the value of this one section of the bill is, if we're fully understanding what the practical application and outcome of the bill's entirety is going to be. So I would ask you to vote no.
Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose, Jennifer Mines, Representative Cleveland Rice?
I think we've had a thorough debate here. I'd like to call a question.
Gentleman wishes to be recognized for a motion.
Yes, I wish.
Gentleman's recognized for a motion. Gentleman may state his motion.
I'd like the question called.
The gentleman has moved the previous question to Senate Bill 250. The question before the House is the motion for the previous question. Those in favor of the motion will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Following members wish to vote. Representative White, Corbin, Yarbrough. Yarbrough, aye. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 57 having voted in the affirmative and 47 in the negative. The previous question is adopted. We will now allow 3 minutes for each side. Representative Jackson, the gentleman wish to...
I'll yield my time to Representative Reeves.
Representative Reeves is recognized to speak up to 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we could spend most of the 3 minutes just on the last part. Representative Cleveland, I won't be putting words in your mouth, but I think the questions were because when you look at the bill is real clear. The information has to be reported to the State Board of Elections. That information that has to be reported according to 962B is name, address, date of birth, and other personal information. So that then has to be reported on the State Board of Elections website quarterly. The problem that we sometimes run into with these type of bills is we look and we say, well, I'm not worried about me getting mixed up with somebody who might be on these rolls, just to be frank. You're not worried about John Smith being up there. But what's going to happen is you're going to have a lot of good citizens who are going to end up having these name, their names on the State Board of Elections website, which is really just a scarlet letter. I don't think that's what we're up here for. If all you're concerned about is making sure that somebody doesn't vote that's not supposed to vote, the State Board of Elections has been given ample ammunition to make sure that this doesn't happen. According to this bill, if you're disqualified for being a felon, for instance, well, that doesn't get published. But if you're disqualified because there's an issue about your citizenship, which can be a very legitimate issue for lots of different people in this country, then suddenly you've got a scarlet letter, you're listed on this website, and yes, somebody's going to end up in a situation where they're listed on that website and getting harassed when they're not the person who's supposed to be listed or somebody else has screwed up. The bill is way too wide open. I think the purpose of the bill is clear. I don't think that we need to pass a bill for that purpose, just to be frank. So I think that when you've got a bill that's got this many questions, this many issues, and this many problems in application to a point where even the bill sponsor is not quite sure of exactly what's going to be on the website, what we're doing, or anything of that sort, it's a bad idea to push the bill through. Again, we don't have to rush because it looks like we're going to keep being here and keep being here and keep being here. You can have this bill, just go back, get reviewed, at least tighten it up. Not saying that you're going to necessarily get anybody else to vote differently, but at least make the bill do what it is you think it's supposed to do, instead of attacking citizens who should not be attacked and shaming people who should not be getting shamed in an effort that I'm not real sure we need to do anything to accomplish. So I would ask you to vote against the bill because, frankly, I would challenge anybody in here to tell me exactly what the bill does. Thank you.
Representative Bell, does the gentleman wish to use 3 minutes?
I will yield my time to Representative Cleveland if he chooses.
Representative Cleveland, wish to speak any further on 3 minutes? Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bill, I think, is pretty straightforward. We have a problem with non-citizens voting in this state, whether you want to admit it or not. It's not a large problem, but it is a problem. And every time a non-citizen votes, he's vacating one of a citizen's vote. And that's the purpose of this bill. I honestly do not think that is going to cause anyone any harm outside of the individual who's going to get taken off of a voter roll and be told that he does not have the right to vote because he doesn't have citizenship in our country. I'd appreciate your vote.
The question before the House is the passage of Senate Bill 250 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 56 having voted in the affirmative, 48 in the negative. Senate Bill 250 passes second reading. Will without objection be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina acts.
Question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 250 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed no.
No.
And pen the chair, the ayes have it. The ayes do have it. Senate Bill 250 having passed its third reading is ordered returned to the Senate. Members, it appears we have concluded our business unless we can find another non-controversial bill to add to the calendar today. We've concluded our business, so we'll go to notices and announcements. Before we go into a great deal of that, though, the chair will advise the body that tomorrow's session will be a no-vote session. We don't anticipate any kind of business on Friday. If there needs to be one, that would also be a no-vote session. And at this point, Monday is anticipated to be a no vote session. So that's the plan going forth. If there's anything that would be changing about Monday, the body would be notified of that tomorrow. But again, the chair can say for sure no votes tomorrow, and then probably no votes on Monday. The chair is not aware of any business to be before the body on Monday at this point. So with that, notices and announcements. For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Jackson, rise?
Inquiry of the chair.
Jones recognized.
Mr. Speaker, and you may not know the answer to this, but I understood from a press conference yesterday that Senator Berger said we might be done by October 31st, and I think he has to have the House consent to go home on October 31st, and I was just wondering, should that be our plan? I'd like to make some plans for November myself.
Well, the Senate can go home when the House says they can go home, so we haven't set a date just yet. For what purpose does the lady from Wake, Representative Dahl, rise?
Inquiry of the chair.
Ladies recognized.
Do we have any idea how next week might play out? I thought I'd beat my friend over here to the
point. I'll give you my best guess on it, Representative Dodd. I don't believe there's going to be any votes on Monday. The only way there would be is if there was a rules committee called that afternoon for bills to be done. But frankly, the chair and the chairs are looking at the rules chairs where chairs are unaware of anything that needs to happen. Now, there may still be a rules committee meeting Monday, but I would say anticipate votes Tuesday, Wednesday, and probably Thursday of next week. We're looking at 3 days next week. We're going to continue on with mini budgets, and I think there's a few other bills. This is a perfect opportunity for the chair to address one other thing. As many of you know, many of you have had bills that have passed the House and have not been heard in the Senate. Anybody in that boat? Okay, here we go. All right. So what we are doing is we are inventorying where those bills are in the pipeline. And I'm meeting with Senator Berger tomorrow to go through a great deal of that, and we're trying to get bills moving along. It is the chair's intent and hope that we can resolve business here in the in the next month or so. That's chairs ready to adjourn as well. So that's where we are. We are trying to get those bills out of the way. And I think members are aware there are several issues that are in controversy right now. There are a number of conference committees that are, that have been appointed and have not yet reduced or produced conference reports. It is the hope of the chair that next week there will be a large number of those bills that get resolved between the House and the Senate. So, that's why I'm telling members to plan on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and that's why I don't think we're going to have anything on Monday, that the real work's going to be those 3 days. So, and Tuesday and Wednesday could be very long days. I will go ahead and advise the body of that, but that's to, you're all aware of the procedure where we get the conference report, have to bring it in and so forth. So that's what we're looking at, but that's going to depend on us coming to an agreement with folks. For what purpose does the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
Gentleman's recognized.
I'm not sure if the body is aware, but the month of October is Clergy Appreciation Month, and so I just wanted to take the time to ask members of the clergy that are in the body to please stand, and I ask that all members give them a round of applause for everything that they do to lead their flock and to work alongside God. Thank you.
If there are any clergy, please feel free to stand. For what purpose does the gentleman from Moore, Representative Bowles, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Having submitted a representative statement with the clerk, I ask that it be read in its entirety upon adjournment and spread across the journal, and like to be recognized and speak on the statement.
Gentlemen, the chair does order that the representative statement be read upon adjournment and spread across the journal. The gentleman is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. October the 10th is known as Double Ten Day in the Republic of China or Taiwan. This is the national day of the Republic of China, Taiwan. This is an important date as it marks the founding of its first democratic republic in Asia. The U.S. and Taiwan are longstanding allies and important trading partners. Taiwan is the 11th largest trading partner for the U.S., and the U.S. is the second largest for Taiwan. Also, North Carolina and Taiwan have important agricultural partners with our largest soybean export. In addition to this year, is the 40th anniversary of the passage of the Taiwan Relations Act by Congress. This act reaffirmed the U.S. support for Taiwan and supported principles such as freedom, democracy, human rights, and the role of law in Taiwan. I want to thank you all for your continued support for the people of Taiwan, the Republic of China. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. For what purpose, the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell, recognized for an announcement.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans, I'll let you know, as of right now, we do not intend on having a caucus on Monday, but please be advised there possibly one on Tuesday morning. So I'll keep you in the loop. Just check your emails.
For what purpose, the lady from Durham, Representative Black, rise.
Mr. Speaker, I need to check a vote. On Senate Bill 250, my intent was to vote no. I was sitting here thinking about who pays for the lawsuit when we are sued over this bill, and I think I accidentally voted yes. So please check for me.
Lady will be recorded as having voted no on Senate Bill 250.
Okay, thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Quick, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
Gentleman's recognized.
While we were on our break, several things happened nationally and internationally that were of note. One of the big things that happened internationally is that my seatmate turned 1 year older and wiser. So please help me congratulate Representative Robert Reeves on being on his birthday.
For what purpose, gentleman from Yadkin, Representative Zachary, rise.
A moment of personal privilege.
Gentleman's recognized.
70 years ago tomorrow, my seatmate entered this world, and so I would ask you to wish him a happy birthday. 70. I said 70.
What purpose, gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Lofton, rise.
Point of personal privilege.
You can recognize, but. I think you're safe now. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm a day late with my social media post, so I figured I'd say something from the floor. But yesterday was my mother's birthday, so I want to wish her a happy birthday. Thank you.
For our purpose, gentleman from Rockingham, Representative Carter, rise.
A point of personal privilege, please. If my light will stay on this time.
Gentlemen's recognized.
I just want to wish my seatmate a happy 49th birthday, and to say this, the best seatmate I've ever had, Speaker Tim Moore.
Thanks. I tell you, Representative Carter, you're not a bad seatmate yourself. Any further notices or announcements? If not, the gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn to reconvene Thursday, October 3rd at 9:30 a.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1.
Representative Lewis moves, seconded by Representative Richardson, that the House do now adjourn to reconvene Thursday, October 3rd at 9:30 a.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Stand adjourned.
Reading of a representative statement. A representative statement recognizing the 108th National Day of the Republic of China, Taiwan, whereas the 108th National Day of the Republic of China, Taiwan, also known as the Double 10 Day, will be celebrated in Atlanta, Georgia on October 7th, 2019, and the celebration commemorates the successful revolution on October 10th, 1911, which ended 4,000 years of monarchical rule in the founding of the first democratic republic in Asia, and whereas the Republic of China, Taiwan, and the United States are long-standing allies who deeply cherish the common values of freedom, democracy, human rights, and the rule of law, and whereas Taiwan is the United States' 11th largest trading partner and its 15th largest export market in the world, and the United States is Taiwan's second largest trading partner, Taiwan supports more than 370,000 well-paid jobs for the United States, and the bilateral trade relationship between Taiwan and the United States is both mutually beneficial and highly productive. And whereas since 1991, the state of North Carolina and Taiwan have enjoyed a long, cordial, and mutually cultural and economic benefit relationship of strong sister states, and friendship that continues to strengthen with each passing year. And whereas in 2018, Taiwan contributed 4,406 jobs to and it invested $175 million to the great state of North Carolina, and $297.4 million of North Carolina's goods were exported to Taiwan, which ranked Taiwan as its seventh largest export market in Asia. And whereas by working together with Taiwan, North Carolina welcomes all opportunities for an even closer economic partnership, such as the signing of the U.S.-Taiwan Bilateral Trade Agreement, BTEA, in order to enhance the special sister state bond between North Carolina and Taiwan, and to encourage further cultural, educational, and business exchanges between the citizens of both nations. And whereas this year marks the 40th anniversary of the United States Congress passage of the Taiwan Relations Act, a crucial milestone in Taiwan and the United States' excellent relations. The Act affirmed the United States' commitment to support and defend Taiwan and helped Taiwan to become the robust democracy it is today. And whereas Taiwan is an active member in the international community with a long history of commitment to international health and safety, humanitarian aid, and environmental protection, now therefore on the 108th National Day of the Republic of China, Taiwan, and the 40th anniversary of the Taiwan Relations Act, it is important to recognize the democratization efforts of Taiwan and the nation's meaningful participation in the World Health Organization, the International Civil Aviation Organization, and the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, as well as other international organizations. In witness whereof, the undersigned certifies that the foregoing statement was read in the House and placed upon the journal on this second day of October 2019, submitted by Representative Jamie Bowles, Jr., signed by House Principal Clerk James White. Representative Howard is recognized to send forth a conference report. To the President of the Senate, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the conferees appointed to resolve the differences between the Senate and the House of Representatives on Senate Bill 559, a bill to be entitled an act to permit financing for certain storm recovery costs and to require the Utilities Commission to study the use of multi-year rate plan and banding of authorized return mechanisms for rate setting for electric public utilities. House Committee Substitute Favorable 6-19-19, House Committee Substitute Number 2 Favorable 7-8-19, 5th Edition Engrossed 8-20-19, submit the following report. The Senate and the House agree to the following amendment to the House Committee Substitute Favorable 6-19-19, House Committee Substitute Number 2 Favorable 7-8-19, 5th Edition Engrossed 8-20-19, and the Senate concurs in the House Committee Substitute as amended. Delete the entire House Committee Substitute Favorable 6-19-19, House Committee Substitute Number 2 Favorable 7-8-19, 5th Edition Engrossed 8-20-19, and substitute the attached proposed Conference Committee Substitute Senate 559-PCCS-14422-RI-6. The conferees recommend that the Senate and the House of Representatives adopt this report. Date conferees approved report, October 2nd, 2019. Conferees for the Senate, Senator Bill Rabin, Chair, Senator Ralph Heiss, Senator Dan Blue, Senator Milton F. Toby Fitch, Jr., Senator Paul Newton. Conferees for the House of Representatives, Representative Julia C. Howard, Chair, Representative David R. Lewis, Representative Elmer Floyd, Representative Dana Bumgarner, Representative Larry C. Strickland, and Representative John R. Bell, IV. Senate Bill 559 with the attached conference report will be referred to the Committee on Rules, Counter, and Operations of the House.